Hello, everybody, and let me start with this. In the past, investors craved information, and today I think it's fair to say that we are drowning in it. The edge no longer lies in access, but it is in the interpretation of that information. A very warm welcome to The More You Know. I'm Jeremy Maggs, and this week we're going to go inside the engine room of modern investing with Chetan Ramlal from Stanlib Asset Management. And I want to talk about sentiment analysis, text mining, code to cloud. In this episode, we're going to examine how technology is transforming the very DNA of investing. It's an important conversation. What skills are going to define the next great investor? And controversially, is the age of the human portfolio manager over? Chetan, a very warm welcome to you. And maybe let me start with a very basic question. Quantitative research, what do we mean by that?
Quantitative refers to numbers, to models, to seeing the world, I guess, through a more evidence-based type lens. So again, it's a broad term, but it encompasses a lot. And it's seeing the world through more structure. That's probably one way I could phrase it. And it really symbolizes this world that we are in. And I think it touches many fields, but really it's the sign of the times that we find ourselves in.
What structure are you looking at on a day-to-day basis?
So I think it all comes down to data. That's really the departure point for all of this. And if you look at the world now, it's evolving. It's changing rapidly. I think we've seen the developments over the last few years. And that foundation, that anchor point is data. And when we speak about structure now, it's about how do you view the world in a way that one can still get insights from this data. So the data must not just be for the sake of it, but rather useful. And that story around data is fascinating. And I think where we find ourselves currently, it's unprecedented in human history.
The problem, of course, and I mentioned this at the start of our conversation, is that there is a danger that we can drown in that data. There is just so much of it. As I pointed out, yes. It's not the access, because the access is there. It's the interpretation. So, Chetan, how has that data landscape from an investment perspective changed in recent years?
Jeez. Jeremy, it's been incredible. So let me take a step back and put this in perspective, and I think the viewers will find this quite interesting. So if you go back to 2010, okay, 15 years ago, around the World Cup,
That was a long time ago.
Yeah, time flies. The world on aggregate, so the human race, was producing around 2 zettabytes of data. And you may wonder, what's a zettabyte?
My next question.
We all know megabytes, got our cell phones, we know gigabytes. What's a zettabyte? So a zettabyte is an incredibly massive number. One zettabyte is equivalent to 1 trillion gigabytes. Okay? To put that into a little more perspective, because that's also hard to wrap our minds around, if you had to think of a grain of sand as one byte of data, then a zettabyte would be as many grains of sand as there are on all the world's beaches. Okay, so mind-boggling. So back in 2010, we were producing two zettabytes on aggregate as a human race. And this year, as of 2025, we are on track to hit almost 180, if not 200 zettabytes. So what we are seeing is that every 3 years, the amount of data we are producing is doubling. And now this is on aggregate across industries, everything from financial data, music, video, all kinds of content. But this frames a very powerful picture because it shows how crazy the world is. If you go back 30 years, or even 20 years, it was a very different landscape. And naturally, if the landscape looks different, the tools that one needs to work with these things are different, and the needs are different. So, again, if you think of the investment and the financial world, we went from a world of just simple financial statements, and now we are in a world of looking at text, looking at earnings calls, looking at unstructured data sources from the internet. So what's happened is that we've moved very quickly, we've moved away from traditional data sources, let's call it, to this whole new realm of unstructured, very, very interesting and novel data sets, which are also now coming into the fore and being utilized in investments.
So let me try and move this away from the theoretical, if I can, as fascinating as it is, Chetan. The question I've jotted down here is, what does this mean for investors trying to find signal in the noise? But I'm going to scratch the word noise out, and I'm going to replace it with the word sand, because it's a very good analogy. So what does it mean for people with money to invest? Connect that dot for me.
That is such a powerful idea, Jeremy, because in this picture that I've just painted, if you look at this data landscape, not all that data is useful, right? And in that sand, right, there's a lot of sand. But in and amongst that are the nuggets that actually can be used. And I think this actually brings me back to the earlier point I made, in that we have to be sure that the tools we have now are the right tools to find those nuggets within the sand. So there's a whole host of ways that one could unpack this and look at it. I think it's very important with an investor mind on whether we're an investment manager or on the other side of the coin as an investor themselves, just to understand how do you start to filter? How do you get better at recognizing what is valuable and what is not? What is the signals and what is the sand or the noise? And it's not a perfect process. I think that's the key takeaway. It's also a process that's evolving. It comes back to the tools, like I keep mentioning. As the tools improve and adapt, so too it becomes easier to separate those signals, separate the noise, and then how do you ingest it? Now, signal can take two forms. If you an asset manager, how do we take those signals and apply it to a process to generate performance for our clients? Mm. And on the other side of the coin, as an investor, how do you know what's valuable in terms of your thinking and your portfolio? How do you understand, are my managers making the right decisions? So it's sort of two parts to it, but I think it's linked to knowledge, understanding the domain better, and having the right tools.
It's about having the right tools, but it's also a sense of prioritization, I would imagine. So let's use the sandbox analogy, although it's a pretty big sandbox, let's be honest. But it makes it easier to understand. And within that sandbox are broad fundamentals, right? You would have general sentiment, which is kind of the mood, it's the feeling, and then the macro data that you talk about, right? So if we divide those into kind of three pillars, how do you either prioritize that, or perhaps more importantly, how do you combine all of that together to come up with a single proposition that is going to define a decision? Does that make sense?
Yeah, completely. And it's such a great question. And if you think about what you've asked, you can see the complexity in that. Mm. Because each of those pillars are in and of themselves very complicated. And this comes back to our first point on structure and having a process that is able to amalgamate and bring all of these pillars together into one structure. Okay, so if you think about, let's start also just looking at company fundamentals. I mean, that's the departure point. Financial ratios, profitability of companies. That's one very important pillar. Then, like you rightly mentioned, there's sentiment out there. This is becoming a much bigger data set, especially in the last 15 to 20 years, understanding how analysts are thinking about companies. If a politician comes onto stage, makes a statement, or if a CEO of a company makes a controversial statement, what does that mean, or what does that do to the share price?
And it might not be the statement, it might be what they omit to say.
Exactly. Yeah. And what's fascinating is the nuance. Mm. Even in a speech, for example, there might be certain cues, there might be certain enunciations or tonalities when someone speaks, or choice of word, which might actually have a signal in it. So when I said earlier on, we're moving to this realm of having so much data at our fingertips, there are ways and techniques now to actually get different, unique insights that wasn't possible 20 years ago. So it all comes back down to process. We've spoken about the sentiment, we've spoken about fundamentals, and then macro. Geopolitics, politicians making statements. understanding interest rates. What's the Fed doing? How is that affecting the macro environment? So if you have a process that is able to, for example, take stocks and understand what is the impact of each of these different pillars on a stock, perhaps assign a certain score. So one could, let's say, rank a stock in a certain fundamental metric, but also incorporate aspects of the sentiment, maybe manage some risk around the macro side. Then you are able to bring it into a process, distill that signal into something valuable, and let's say build a portfolio that would outperform. But the point is, it's a very complex and complicated process to do that.
With the caveat, I imagine, that it's always a moving set of variables, right? So it's never going to be a static or a linear function.
Oh, that's it. Let's use that example of a financial statement. And let's go back, time travel 50 years. A company would report financials once, maybe twice a year, maybe a trading update here and there. And that would be sort of, let's call it the hard data that the market would have access to. Of course, you could meet with management and speak to them. But what you're seeing is quite infrequent data releases of some sort. But fast forward 50 years to today, people are sending tweets. CEOs are all over the internet. As much as you've got financials, you've got people speculating. You've got people having opinions, expressing a view on social media. Are those not signals also? And that's where companies, where thinking is moving, because people are realizing there's a signal amongst the sandbox. It's not just limited to a traditional, let's call it classical data set anymore. So it's that being nimble. And like you said, the world is moving very fast. We have to ask ourselves the question, are we keeping up? And are our processes and structures still relevant?
We are going to stay in this fascinating sandbox. You are watching The More You Know. And in this episode, we are diving into the real mechanics of modern investing, from data, as we've been discussing, not to discount, of course, the importance of the human mind. And my guest is Chetan Ramlal. So let's continue this. It's both fascinating and exhausting as well for many people. But can you give me an example then of how a single processed piece of data or pulled together all of those data points then becomes an actionable signal in terms of investment?
So let's put on that quantitative lens, and also let's think in terms of a systematic type process, because that's really what it comes down to. It links to that point of structure. It links to that point of working and investing in a world where data is your main commodity. And that's really the key departure point. So let's take an example where you've got a certain company or a stock, and let's use the example of analysts and sentiment, which we spoke about earlier. Given the data that we have at our disposal now, we could come up with a sentiment type indicator. So that could, for example, look at how are analysts revising the earnings on the company. Are those earnings being revised upwards, so positive sentiment? Or conversely, are they being revised down, so a negative sentiment? So let's take that example and assume we've got all the stocks in the market. We are able to build an indicator for every single company on that earnings sentiment factor. Now what we are able to do is perform testing. So we can test what is the impact of companies with those certain factors, and what is the impact on performance over the long term. So what that means is we are able to determine persistence. Is that signal an indicator of performance statistically? So what this does is, if you imagine many different factors, so this was an example on sentiment, we could bring in things like the valuations of the company, cheap companies versus expensive companies. So if you imagine a host of different signals, one is able to build a portfolio and test persistence of these different signals and figure out over the long term, will these different signals drive returns? And in that process, you can also incorporate macro views, account for macro risk management. So it's almost as if you've got this melting pot of different pieces of information that get optimized and combined to result an test whether they have predictive power over the long term.
So, Chetan, I want to raise this if I can. And I want to talk a little bit about risk in this process. So you're dealing with all of these variables, but given that we live in this era right now of hyper-accentuated volatility and uncertainty, how do you make allowance for the for the proverbial black swan that is going to creep into this process at some point? How do you build in analysis and resilience around that?
So, as always, you've got to come back to data, and data is what is our strongest foundation to build a process on. If you think of these black swan type events, by definition, they are hard to predict. They are what we'd say multiple sigma events, where it's very unlikely, but it can happen. But nonetheless, there are ways to protect against it and do our best to manage it within the framework we have. So, for example, if you think about macro risks, there are ways which a portfolio, for example, can be tilted and optimized to, for example, neutralize itself to certain macroeconomic factors. So, for example, the gold price or move in oil or an exchange rate. So if you think of a portfolio being constructed both bottom-up, so looking at the best of stocks, and also a top-down view from the macro lens, if there's a sort of neutrality from the macro perspective, that will go a long way to helping or, I guess, buffering against very harsh, unforeseen macro circumstances. But nonetheless, again, by definition, it's a tough one because one can't foresee what exactly is going to happen. It has to come back to process. And if you believe in the long term that markets will be driven or should be driven by fundamentals, then one has to have faith in that. And I think, Jeremy, an important point is that you've got to think in terms of bias as well, right? And I think there's a subtle point in this where having a systematic type process and having a structured quantitative type approach to our thinking goes a long way in cutting out human bias. And I think human bias is a very dangerous part of investing where structure falls away. And I think we, as humans, naturally can be swayed by our emotions, which can be a big detriment in the investing world. And it's how best do you separate these two worlds. It comes back to the signal and noise again. What's the data actually telling us? And how do we build a strategy that looks at those points of solidity and not the emotions and the, let's call it the looseness around a sentiment?
I absolutely understand that. But at some point, surely human judgment does play a role, albeit you might suggest a diminishing one.
Yes. So I think, and this I think quite neatly brings me to that point of understanding how the human portfolio manager is actually evolving, given these tools that we find ourselves with and the technology that's at our fingertips. Humans play a critical role, and that's categorically true.
For now.
For now. But I think for the foreseeable future, we are playing an important part in building these systems and also understanding what we call domain knowledge. So if you think of the knowledge ecosystem, there's sort of two broad categories. You've got domain knowledge and specific knowledge. So if you think of the AI tools that are out there, they're very much specific. There's machine learning algorithms that can do specific things. There's a lovely saying which I like, to the man with a hammer, everything looks like a nail. So you've got to have someone who understands the domain. How do you take the right tools and use them in the right way to get value? And that's the role that the humans are still playing. Okay? It's a very important part where we understand the domain. If we take investing, for example, we understand the nuances of the markets. We understand which tool is appropriate to get value at a given point in time. And I fully accept that with each passing year and as technology evolves, the landscape shifts. But humans are still part of that. And I think we're very much in this world of, it's a combination of, let's say, the man and machine that really is going to move and get the real value forward. that combination?
Are we at the very beginning of this process, do you think? I mean, we're way off what the summit is. Even we don't even know perhaps what that summit is. But do you think at this point businesses are equipped right from people and platforms to compete in this new era?
The last 3 years have been a blur. Mm-hmm. Since the advent of ChatGPT a couple of years ago, the world has moved so rapidly. And industries are struggling to keep up. And I think there's this feeling of being overwhelmed because so much is happening. And if you take a step back and also looking at the space, like you rightly pointed out, we really are at the bottom of this curve. As much as things have played out and as crazy as things have seemed to be at this point, I firmly believe we haven't seen the start of this really. So to that point, companies are struggling. Not all industries are at the same level of sophistication, of having sufficient capital to get into these technologies. So I think what's happening is that the awareness of this is growing, but companies are struggling to catch up. And I think being in South Africa, we have our host of challenges. We sort of look to some of the more developed nations and what they're doing and the amount of capital that they have. But even within those constraints, I think there's some great initiatives that's happening in South Africa. And companies are really working hard to stay abreast of what's happening.
So let me close the loop as we end this conversation then. The question I had jotted down here is, will systemic investing become the norm or always a niche? But what I've heard you say is that it might be niche now, but in time, it's inevitable it will become the norm, right?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. So systematic investing, Jeremy, I think if you look at the landscape of the world now and the trajectory of the world now, it's going to become ubiquitous. Mm. The way investors think about the markets is fundamentally shifting to a more systematic way of viewing the world. You still bring in the best of fundamentals, but what this now does is you allow other data sets, other signals to come in so that one can get a much richer signal to get better value in investment strategies.
So just quickly then, what do you want investors to take out of our conversation?
I think the most important thing is have an evolving mindset. Evolve. The world is changing rapidly, but there shouldn't be fear. I think there should be excitement and look for opportunities. I think there's a lot of fear with AI. People are not sure what's going to happen, what's the disruptions going to be. And while there will be disruptions, remember, opportunities exist. Mm. So if investors and clients can keep in mind that opportunities will be there, make sure your skills and our skills are evolving to keep up with these technologies, and simply don't fear. It's exciting, it's positive, and I think a lot of good and success will come out of this whole journey.
What a fascinating conversation. So there's no doubt this is not about man versus machine. It's how the best minds use the best tools. So my thanks to Chetan Ramlal for showing us how smart data, smart tech, and smart people are combining to shape the future of investing. That's it for this edition of The More You Know. Until next time, stay curious, stay informed, and as Chetan said, stay invested. Stanlib Asset Management Pty Limited is an authorized financial services provider in terms of the FASE Act. This content should not be construed as advice.